Holy ground is one of those subjects that is so common in religious settings that we refer to it as an age-old concept. It's so age-old that it appears in many different mediums. My father instilled within me the concept of holy ground in the afternoons we spent together after he came home from work and I from school. The education would kick off to the sound, "Here we are, born to be kings, we're the princes of the universe." I always looked forward to the theme song from Highlander. Not just because it was written and performed by Queen, which obviously I can't do, but it had an eternal story. Immortal men forced by some power beyond them to pit against each other. The only way to fulfill the inner call was to use a sword and take another immortal's head. It was the only way that they can die, and it was the only way that they would embrace the quickening. The movie followed Connor McLeod of the Clan McLeod as he meets for the gathering in New York before the final quickening. In the story, Connor was born in 1518 and died in 1536 during a clan war. He was surprised when he woke from his death. He was shunned by his family. He was driven away and found by Ramirez, who trained him, and Ramirez, who would later be killed by the Kurgan. Anyway, you can check out Highlander if you'd like. Go to the video store and rent it or whatever the kids are doing these days. Look, I love the movie, but the real strength in the movie is nostalgia. I don't think it ever won any awards. Of course, the reason I bring it up is the rules. Every story has rules. And if you've heard any of my other sermons, I spend considerable time understanding any story through what is called world building. And the world building involves the rules that an author creates in which the world of the story exists. There are rules about how two immortals in the story of the Highlander interact with one another. First, I'll tell you the lesser rules. They must keep their challenges away in secret from the mortal world. No one can know. Also, that immortals normally don't fight or discuss their business in public. The only exception is within relationships, as immortals sometimes share the entire truth of their existence with their significant other. Immortals who die in public are expected to leave the area in order to avoid contact with those who knew them. And new or young immortals assume a brief grace period in which they receive training, protection from an elder. These are the lesser rules, but the bigger rules in the story. There can be only one. If you've seen Highlander, you know there can be only one. But that's not really today's subject. And that duels can be only fought one-on-one. There's no ganging up in the duels. But three is the whole point of what I'm getting at. They are safe on holy ground. According to the TV lore, this was broken once in Pompeii in AD 79. And we know how that ended. Buffy the Vampire Slayer taught me the same thing. Some places are holy, and that means they are set apart. They're not treated in a profane manner. And when I say profane, I don't mean language. It just means they're not to be treated commonly. For the McLeods and the vampires, this means that they could only do certain things in certain places. Holy places in cinema are pretty standard. Churches, sacred spaces, Indian reservations are often in it, cemeteries. I thought about calling my friend Jeremy this weekend to ask if vampires can come into synagogues. And holy places are consecrated places. They are sanctified. They are made sanctuaries. Those who go to them have no hope. They pilgrimage to holy places to find hope. The term sanctuary is an old, archaic term. Sometimes we refer to the main hall of a church as a sanctuary, but for others, that's a little too formal. However, the word is finding itself in rebirth. On February 24th, NPR did a story on the new sanctuary movement in Philadelphia, Ohio. The group creates church services and rituals specifically built to stop immigration raids in churches. This is a new idea, because in the past, churches were considered, even by immigration enforcement, to be sanctuaries, where different rules applied. Now many question how long those different rules will truly apply. Historically, churches have opened their doors to the immigrant community as havens from those who would separate them from their family. This is because for churches to truly be holy ground, they must do holy things. Part of what makes places holy are the purposes for those places. Because you know Jean Valjean found his new life on holy ground. Moses found courage in holy ground. Then Jesus walked into holy ground and overturned the tables of the money changers. Because the holiness of the ground came into question. On June 12, 2016, there was a shooting in Florida at the Pulse nightclub. This rocked the LGBT community and rocked many of those who find friends and family and loved ones in that community. I remember coming back from preaching in Ellisville that day, and the first call I made was to a friend of mine who is a leader in the LGBT community, and I said, "Is there a vigil? Is there a memorial?" And they held a memorial that night at a local gay bar. And I realized while my feet shuffled on the gravel underneath them, that this little fenced-in place for so many years has been a haven and is truly a sanctuary in truly holy ground. One of the organizations I'm with wanted to hold a vigil, and we did, in a great hall of a chapel on a college campus. In that day, those of us who didn't truly understand how holy ground moves were made to understand. When the LGBT community stood before us and they said, "Did you even ask us if we felt okay coming into a church building? Did you ask us what we would do or how we wanted to do this?" The disconnect between what we understood to be holy in what truly was holy made itself aware. Because I knew when I stood at that bar that I was standing in a place filled with holiness. Churches are supposed to be welcoming places, created to purposes. And we must be held accountable when we are not. In one archaeology class during graduate school, we were talking about the space historically considered the tomb where Jesus was laid before the resurrection. Now they call it the Church of the Holy Sepulchre. I always thought it was a neat name. There are a few other options for this holy site. One, an empty tomb that looks exactly like the biblical description, with a groove in front of the hole in the cave where a stone could be rolled. When asked which one my professor thought was the real one, he said the most interesting thing. He was unwilling to say whether he believed either was the actual place, but what he did say stuck with me and will forever stick with me. Holy places tend to stay holy. And though I've never had an opinion on the burial of Jesus, I'll never forget that statement about holy ground. As it is as if the actions taken place leave an essence, a spiritual echo of ancient times, a memory built into the stones that evokes wonder and awe, in otherworldliness. I spent a lot of time in church buildings growing up. Holy ground, right? I went Sunday morning, Sunday night, and Wednesday. And by the time I was in high school, many of my Saturdays were spent in youth group and I was preaching regularly in nursing homes. By the time I was in college, I chose to do this. When I started graduate school, this process became formalized and professionalized. And by the time I completed my first apprenticeship in Memphis, Tennessee, I could feel redundancy setting in. I could really start to feel the long, dark tea time of the soul. I was burning up. I was burning out. And it was this time I began to surround myself with people who could help me look through my professionalism, through my heritage, and the many years of expectations, much of which was placed on myself. I guess what I'm saying is they helped me begin to excavate my life. My interactions corporately in sanctuaries and holy places began to evolve. When my first apprenticeship at a small evangelical church in Memphis, Tennessee ended, my first Wednesday since that professional ministry ended, I started getting ready for church. And then stopped because I didn't want to go. I wanted to see a movie. In fact, there was a new Harry Potter movie going out. I couldn't remember the last time I saw a movie in a theater by myself. And by this time in life, I had a bias against going to movie theaters by myself because I was lonely. I lived on campus at an evangelical seminary. All my friends had something to do on Wednesday night. So I decided to go to a movie. But I wasn't just going to go and sit in shame by myself, by the corner, by the door alone. I wasn't going to rush in right before the movie started and run out right before it ended. I went early. I went to go get a good seat. I went to go get popcorn and a Coke. It was before smartphones, so because I go so early, I took a book. And I got there really early because it was a date with me, just me. And I sat in that theater alone on a Wednesday night, happy. I got into a habit of seeing movies alone after that. I learned that if I really actually wanted to see the movie, I would rather see it alone. Especially the ones I knew would be bad and I just wanted to see them anyway. Sometimes I just don't want to hear about how bad the new Ninja Turtles movie is. I just want to go see it. I thought of that this past week while I was working on this sermon. I learned early on that since minister hours were opposite everyone else's, I could get into movies ridiculously early in the day with huge empty theaters. Sometimes opening day with only a dozen people in the theater. So I went to a movie. When I feel stress setting in, look, I know I can't take care of the stress sitting in a theater alone, but I know when I walk in there, my phone doesn't work. I know when I walk in there, there are no expectations and I don't have to justify whether the movie was good to anybody. And the space around me becomes sacred. I would never go as far to say that every movie theater I've walked into since that time has been holy ground. But there was something. See, there's this part when I go hiking on the Choctaw trails that I get to and I just cry. There's actually a section hiking on the Noxubee Hills Trail in Tom Bigbee Forest that brings tears to my eyes. There are landmarks that I ride by on my bicycle. And when I worked in hospice, traveling from house to house, I would take refuge and eat in the same places over and over again. And it would be silly for me to call all these places holy ground, because then there is no significance to the word holy. I performed a friend's wedding in Clinton. It was on their property, a small farm, and I jokingly requested that a year after the wedding they raise a chapel in the place where we had the ceremony. They weren't religious folk, but their response was funny. He said, "This is where we're going to put the chicken coop." To which I said, "No better name for a chicken coop than the chapel." Over the years, I've thought a lot about holy ground, usually during vampire movies or reruns of Highlander, but as of late, I begin to ask more seriously, what makes a place holy? I don't know, but I have an opinion. Holy ground is consecrated during holy action. Corporate worship areas, cemeteries, churches, I would even add schools and hospitals, places where things happen that affirm life. These grounds are sanctified through echoes of the past, made holy through blood, sweat, and tears. Those of the foreparents before us and our children to come. But see, that's an easy definition. I can't help but think there's something more to holy ground. Holy ground is made holy by holy people when they do holy things. I guess what I mean is we take the holiness with us whenever our actions are righteous. So I don't want to mince words. We consecrate ground when it is instilled with our hope. We sanctify space when we act for justice. Sometimes we settle down in holy ground. And sometimes holy ground settles down where we step. But that's just an opinion. And I hope it doesn't sound too religious. But as we go into a world filled with fear, we are the chalice and we carry the light into the darkness. Thank you.